And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
All right, let's get it rolling. Here on a Tuesday, Chris Brown, Matty Glab in for Steve Tasker. As we begin to turn the page on week three and open up chapter four, week four of the NFL season, which, man, this is not looking like a very competitive game. At least the odds makers don't think it will be. And when you have to start a third string quarterback like the Houston Texans do, you kind of understand why the point spread is what the point spread is, 17 to 17 and a half, depending on which odds maker you're looking at. But, Matty, these are the games that used to concern me a great deal. They concern me a little less nowadays because I think we feel confident that Coach McDermott is such a sweater of the details that he's not going to let these guys for a second, not that many of them would anyway, but kind of play down to your level of competition, which is something you want to avoid at all costs in a league like this.
Yeah, I think Sean McDermott is just too good of a coach to let his team look forward to the big week five that we're already talking about and probably will talk about in the show today as we go on throughout the week, just because it's the Kansas City Chiefs, and that's a big game for the Buffalo Bills. But first, they have the Houston Texans, and we all hear it from the coaching staff and the players. It's a game-to-game, week-to-week league, and anybody can show up any day and perform pretty well. So even if the point differential or the spread is what it is, this team's not going to let that get to their head.
Yeah. Monday night game last night, Matty. I don't know how much of that you caught, but it looked like the Cowboys went back to the old Zeke days. I mean, they were running the heck out of the ball, especially in the first half. It's funny. I'm watching the game with my son, and he's got, like, Miles Sanders, and I think he had one other Eagles player, and he was still finishing his homework. And he's like, hey, is Miles Sanders doing anything? I said, I haven't even seen the Eagles with the ball yet. I was watching the game for about 25 minutes. I'm like, holy cow, the Eagles haven't touched the football. I think there was a spot in the first half where the Cowboys were lining up to run their 34th play of the game, and the Eagles had run 9 plays on offense. 34 plays to 9.
Incredible. The Dallas Cowboys had 71 plays on offense, which is a pretty big number. And also shout out to Trayvon Diggs, Stephon Diggs' brother, for housing an interception, taking it 59 yards. I heard that he's going to try and start a little wager maybe with his brother for who can score the most touchdowns this season.
I think he's got three now, right?
But I had Dak in one of my leagues, and so I was happy to see him get 3 touchdowns, rack up the score for my fantasy leagues because I went 3-0 this weekend.
Now, does Trayvon Diggs have 3 touchdowns now? Is that right? Does he have on the season?
I think it's 3.
I got to check. I will check that in the next break.
Check that.
I heard it somewhere. I think it was SportsCenter, and I thought I heard they said he had 3 now. In 3 games, which is, that's pretty crazy. So I got to double check that. It's definitely at least 2, but it might be 3 in 3 games, which is, as we know, more than Stephon has right now. So Stephon has 1 from the Miami game, but that's it, I believe. So, yeah, that would be an interesting competition to say the least, especially if Trayvon can hang with him, knowing he touches the football far less than his older brother does. But kind of a cool little thing going on there. Did you watch Manning Cast, Matty?
I did watch Manning Cast. That's the only thing I had on last night was a Manning Cast. Never switched over to the actual game. And so I got to hear them talk to who was on, Matt Stafford, Nick Saban. So some pretty entertaining parts. I was not watching. I had gone to bed by the time that Eli flipped the birds to the broadcast.
Apparently, Eli and Peyton are still learning about the magic of live television. He just threw up a couple of birds for, I guess, what equated to his description of Eagles fans. And he's looking at the cameraman, who I'm guessing is in his house. I don't know if there's a director of sorts in the house with him, kind of helping him out. He's like, well, you can blur that out, right? And I'm just like, this is live television, Eli. You can't expect these guys to just at a moment's notice cover up your two middle fingers. What are you doing? So, yeah, he has since apologized, from what I understand. But, yeah, I mean, even the network, I mean, the network producers are good, but they're not that good. I can't imagine what the control room looked like that was running that broadcast. Like, what is he doing? Oh, my God. Like, that's the last thing you'd expect from the Manning brothers. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and of course, it was Peyton Manning who was egging Eli on to, like, flip his fingers to the camera because – he was like, oh, yeah, we're walking in the game and people are flipping us off and blah, blah, blah. And Peyton's like, do it, do it.
Oh, man, always blame the older brother, right? And then there was a funny part at the beginning of the broadcast. So Peyton puts his hands on his head because he can't believe the throw that Jalen Hurts threw early in the game when it was a pick at the goal line. And he puts his hands on his head, and unfortunately for him, they ran it on replay, and he had a giant pit stain under his right arm. And, of course, Eli went to town on him for that. He's just like, wait, what? Are you sweating? What's going on over there? What do you got, the sauna jacked up in your man cave? What's happening? He goes, I got a quarter zip on here, and I'm cool as a cucumber. All you got on is a plaid shirt. And he's like, yeah, well, I mean, he didn't have anything to say. What do you say to that? Like, you've been caught dead to rights on national television with a giant pit stain under your arm. God, that's embarrassing. So he just kind of let it go by the board without saying anything else. So that's probably the most entertaining part of Manning Cast, just those two guys busting on each other for the better part of 3 hours. The only thing I was disappointed in, Maddie, was the fact that we are not going to get Manning Cast for the Bills Monday night game. They don't come back until, I think, week 7 now. They did the first 3 weeks, and now they don't come back till week 7, which is after the Bills game.
I would have liked to have it for a Monday night football game for the Buffalo Bills. It's a game that I would definitely watch back if we had the Manning cast. I think also at one point in the beginning of the game, Eli was showcasing what he could do with his hips, showing the torque that Dak Prescott does to warm up before games. And Eli said, hey, Peyton, my hips don't lie.
Yeah, well, he thought his hips were better than Shakira's. I would respectfully disagree.
Yes.
And then Peyton started making fun of him. He said, you don't have as much torque as Dak. He was flipping the hip, though. It was pretty good. That was more flexibility than I was anticipating from Eli on that. So that he did a good job. It is wildly entertaining, and it's like you're sitting watching a game with guys that know everything that's going on and can suggest things in game situations. Like Peyton was all over Mike McCarthy for not calling a timeout at the end of the first half when it looked like they were going to be getting the ball back, you know, a chance to put more points on the board. And he's like, why is he not calling timeout? What is going on? I mean, he's turned into a full-blown armchair quarterback, and we're all there to see it. It's glorious. I'll watch it every time they're on.
Yeah, and I forgot, but LeBron James came on too. And
yeah, I saw that.
I remember they were teeing up LeBron, so they were like, okay, LeBron, what play should happen next? And they were getting ready to score. The Dallas Cowboys wore, I don't know what it was, second and goal, third and goal, something like that. And LeBron was like, they should just redo what they did a couple downs ago. I think that will work. And sure enough, Dallas Cowboys run it into the end zone. And then they asked LeBron to like break down the play. And he actually did a pretty good job. He was like, there's only this many linebackers on the field, 3 defensive linemen. So of course, you know, it was going to work out for a run play there right into the end zone. I was like, impressive.
Not bad. And of course the producers had his high school football highlights at the ready. Mm-hmm. They were running those over and over. I mean, he looked like a man amongst boys, which I guess you would expect because I think he was like 6'6", in high school as like a sophomore and a junior before shooting up to 6'8". But yeah, it's really good. I think they do a nice job with that. I mean, just got to get Eli up to speed on what they can and cannot do on live television. That's probably the only hitch there. As far as some other NFL news and notes, the war of, I don't know if I call it a war of words, but the differing opinions as to how everything went down in New England when Tom Brady was shown the door, there are several different stories. The truth is probably somewhere in between, but the Patriots and Belichick insist, you know, we did not force him out. He wanted to leave. You know, Brady indicated they didn't want to re-sign him. It's and naturally the media is blowing it up to high heaven in New England as we get set for the Brady homecoming game this Sunday when the Bucs go up to New England to play the Patriots. And I don't know if I would ever be a bigger Bucs fan than I would be this week. I'd be more than happy to see 40-10 and watch Bill Belichick throw another telephone. So Brady can pour it on as far as I'm concerned. Just never take your foot off the gas. Keep scoring touchdowns. And you got to expect, Matty, that the Bucs are going to be a little sore after last week's game out in L.A., which they lost by 10 to the Rams. They're going to be looking to get back on the winning track here. And I saw this stat, I want to say it was like 2 weeks ago, and I'm probably going to get it wrong, but I know I'm at least close on this. I believe Tom Brady has lost more than two games, has lost two games in a row six times in his 20-year career, which is insane. That's like otherworldly. So the odds of him going into New England and losing that game, I think, are slim to begin with. You add on the fact that they lost last week and you know they want to get back on track. And then obviously they have a much more complete roster than New England does right now. I don't know. You know what? I haven't looked at the spread, but you got to think that the Bucs are going to win that. I mean, Belichick's defense might keep him in it for a little while, but I kind of see the Bucs pulling away there. Do you?
Yeah, I don't think it's really going to be much of the game. Like you said, maybe at the beginning when the Patriots defense is doing Patriots defense things, because Bill Belichick is going to be able to at least scheme a decent game against this Bucs offense that returns all of their starters from last year. But I think just with what this game means to Tom Brady, it's going to mean a lot to his entire team, and his teammates are going to want to go out there and fight for him and lay it on even more. Like the Buffalo Bills have done for any situation or scenario when a player goes back to play their old team. So I think with that, the added factor of just wanting to, you know, kick butt against your former team. And I don't think Tom is going to let any of the mental side of things get in his way. I think he said this is not a time to reflect as I'm going to play the Patriots, not a time to reflect on my career or what I did with the Patriots or where I'm at now. So I don't see this matchup really phasing him at all. I see the Buccaneers doing everything they can to make the Patriots look silly.
Yeah. Patriots are 6-point underdogs at home on Sunday against the Bucs. Over-under is at 49.5. So I'd be happy with, 46-2. Stay right under the under there. And just give the Patriots a safety in the game. That would be totally fine by me. Love to see a blowout victory by Tampa Bay in that one. Josh Gordon looks like he's going to sign with the Chiefs. I understand the Players Association has to support opportunity for any of their players, but when you've been suspended six times, like, how many strikes do you get here? I mean, I don't know. I'm a little conflicted with this. And I wonder, this was the first thing I tweeted after I saw this yesterday. First question for me was, do you think he'll be up to speed enough to get on the field against the Bills in 2 weeks? That is the question.
Yeah, that'll be interesting to see if they want to deploy him in that game. I mean, I would think if he is ready to do even the smallest thing that's going to make it harder for the Bills defense, that they would definitely want to put him out there, even if it's just for a couple of snaps in different types of down and distance situations where they can really use his strength to get a first down or a touchdown or whatever it may be. But I think with where the Chiefs are at now with two losses, they're going to be wanting to do anything and everything they can do to put themselves in a position to win or to get ahead in a game or to extend their lead. And so if Josh Gordon can help them do that, I think they're going to throw him out there pretty early.
Yeah. And the only other NFL news and note that we wanted to get to was Indianapolis Colts running back Marlon Mack, who missed all of last season with an Achilles injury, is healthy now, but he can't get on the field because of their draft choice from a year ago, Jonathan Taylor, and their pass-catching third down back, Nyheim Hines. So those two guys are getting the bulk of the playing time, and Marlon Mack has requested a trade. The Colts, according to reports, have agreed that they will mutually pursue a trade of the running back. So it looks like Marlon Mack will soon be on the move and traded by the Colts, to whom remains to be seen. I don't know about you, Maddie, but I haven't seen any potential options that have been floated out there by some of the national reporters. So this has to be probably in the very early stages.
Yeah, I'm scrolling on Twitter now to see if there's anything updated about this, but I don't really see any reporters. It's just more just fans saying Marlon Mack should go to my team.
Yeah. So we'll see where that goes in the coming days and probably weeks. Somebody has an injury at running back, bang, suddenly somebody will be interested. So we'll have to see where that goes going forward. He was a productive back when he was one of the primary guys there. So be interesting to see what he can offer coming off that Achilles injury, although all indications are he is 100% healthy. Wanted to get into our Twitter conversation today. And now with three games played across the league, things are kind of settling out a little bit. Who do we believe is the biggest challenger to the Bills in the AFC conference race through 3 weeks? We still have some undefeated teams in this conference. We have some perennial favorites who have stubbed their toes a little bit. So where does the landscape of the AFC point you in terms of who figures to be the biggest challenger for the Bills in the AFC? 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. The number, get on board. Got an open line for you there. Or you can hit us up on the tweet sheet at 1BillsLive. Maddie, at first blush, where do your instincts and your eyeballs take you in this AFC conference?
Well, it's hard not to go with the Chiefs just right off the bat. I know they have struggled to start the season. I know they are 1-2 and at the bottom of the AFC West, but they are still the Chiefs. They still have a lot of talent. You would have to imagine that they can get some things together, that Patrick Mahomes can stop throwing those ill-timed interceptions, and that their defense can get back to being a factor in games at times. I know they're not going to have the best defense in the NFL, but making better decisions than they have the first 2 weeks. So I'm a believer that the Chiefs are kind of get back to how the Chiefs play. But at this point, I mean, I just look at the AFC West. The Raiders are 3-0. The Broncos are 3-0. The Chargers are 2-1. The Chargers look like a really good team to start the season. And through 3 weeks, it's like, are the Raiders or the Broncos for real? I think the Broncos are maybe not as for real as the Raiders are. I think the Raiders have some weapons. Can Derek Carr do it all season? So I kind of look immediately at the AFC West, throw the Titans in there too. The Titans are always going to be the Titans. I know that's a game that a lot of our players probably have circled on the schedule, even though they don't want to admit that they circle games on the schedule. This is a game that our team is going to want to kick their butts because of what happened last year and how that game got thrown off time-wise, and just it was a weird game for many reasons. So yeah, that's kind of where my eyes go immediately. I don't know if I can pick one off the bat right now, but what about you, Brownie?
Yeah, I mean, for me, right now in the AFC, I still think it's too early to kind of definitively stamp anybody. But I think Kansas City is still at the top. I'm just a proponent of you got to beat the man before you can be the man kind of thing. And the hope here, you know, personally, is that they no longer have the hunger to get back to the top of the mountain. We kind of saw them coast through the regular season last year, doing just enough to win games because, you know, the difference between them and most of the rest of the conference was pretty wide. And so they didn't have to have their foot on the floor on the gas pedal for every single week of the regular season, and they could still win games. They got away with it. And then they turned it on in the playoffs, and as we have discussed on this show many times, they probably played their best game of the season in the AFC title game against the Bills. But right now they're playing sloppy football on offense, as you mentioned, with some of those ill-advised turnovers. I think they'll get that fixed. I think Mahomes is not a quarterback that normally turns the ball over very much at all. So I think it's just a matter of course correcting, and he'll be fine. The bigger problem for me is their defense. They've given up at least 29 points in each game that they've played this season. Now, they have played a tough schedule. I mean, first three games, Cleveland, Baltimore, Chargers. I mean, that's a pretty stiff schedule to come out of the gate with. Should their defense improve? I believe it will. Three of their next five games, Maddie, are against NFC East teams. Eagles, Washington, Giants. But I think they've got to regroup fast to be one of the top AFC clubs. The other considerations for me, Cleveland, I think they're in the conversation because I think the Browns and the Bills, you could argue, have the most complete rosters in the conference, like top to bottom on offense, top to bottom on defense. They're super talented, and they have some depth. I'm still not convinced that Cleveland has as much depth as the Bills do. And their offense is going to need to bring it the next 3 weeks. They've got three high-scoring teams that they have to play the next 3 weeks. They've got the Vikings, the Chargers, and the Cardinals. Arizona leads the league in scoring right now. Minnesota's eighth, and the Chargers just hung 30 points on the Chiefs. So these next three games are going to tell us a lot about how seriously we should take the Browns. I can't get to the Raiders. I just can't get there. I am not convinced. They can't run the football right now. They're riding Derek Carr's arm, which I think once you get up against a good pass defense, they're going to be revealed for what they are, which right now is a one-dimensional offense. They can't turn to their run game in any way, shape, or form right now. They're last in the league in rushing. So I think that's an issue that will eventually crop up. Maybe not this week, but maybe the week after. Chargers, sneaky good team, Maddie. I know they finally got on the radar here after their win last week at Kansas City, but they have a quarterback who can do a lot of the same things as Josh Allen. He's got gobs of talent around him. Keenan Allen's one of the best route runners in the league. Mike Williams, who tooled the Chiefs last Sunday, and then they got Austin Eckler. I mean, their run defense is a problem, but if Derwin James is okay after getting a shoulder ding last week, the team is one that can go toe-to-toe with a lot of the higher-scoring teams in the conference. So I think the Chargers they're on the watch list, I guess is what I would say. And then there's Baltimore. I think they're doing it with smoke and mirrors right now, but they find a way to pull out these games, man. I don't get it. Like, they don't have enough to be a prolific offense, but their defense forces turnovers, and somehow they pull out these squeaker games every single week. It's hard for me to believe a team that needed a 66-yard field goal to beat the Lions of all teams is a team we need to worry about. But I just think they're one of the most mentally tough teams in the entire league. And that somehow helps them squeak out victories in some way, shape, or form. I do not believe in Tennessee. I know you were saying that Tennessee's still on your radar. I don't believe in them. I think their defense has changed too much. They can't stop anybody. And until they prove otherwise, I'm not jumping on the Tennessee train, even though they've been a contender each of the last 3 years. And Indy, that was a team I thought was a shoo-in for the playoffs. And they have got problems. We thought their offensive line was great. It has been awful through the first 3 weeks. It's messed up Carson Wentz's internal clock. Now he's seeing ghosts and he's running for his life and he's chucking the ball out of bounds like way too prematurely. And their defense is giving up points. So I don't know if they can get it fixed in time to contend here. So those are some of my thoughts. Sorry, I was rambling there. I just kind of ran through half the AFC. But I don't know. I can't get on board with Indy or Tennessee. For some reason, I just have very little faith in the AFC South.
Yeah, the AFC South, I mean, you've got two teams that are winless in the AFC South right now. Yeah. You have a team with one win who has a rookie quarterback who is going to have his second career start against the Buffalo Bills, a top five defense in the NFL. So, yeah, I would agree. Not too much hope in the AFC South, although I do think the Titans are – they've got it on their on the offense. Yeah, their defense isn't doing as well. But Kansas City Chiefs defense is doing worse. I just pulled up some of their stats.
It's bad.
They rank towards the bottom of the league in so many stats.
Yeah. They're
allowing 31 points a game, 430 yards a game. It's bad.
Yeah. Now again,
70% completion percentage is what they're allowing.
Right. They've been out of sync on defense, in a word. I think all of the, you know, we talk all the time, Maddie, about the off-season studying that the coordinators do in this league. And I think a lot of OCs have done their homework on the Chiefs' defense. And I think they've picked up certain tendencies as to when Spagnuolo is going to go all-out blitz. Because watching that game last week between Kansas City and the Chargers, every time that Kansas City went zero blitz, which means no help on the back end, it's man-to-man across the board, and you're sending seven usually. Whenever they sent all-out blitz at Justin Herbert, every single time the Chargers had a check-down option leaking out of the backfield, whether it was a running back or, you know, an H-back tight end type, they would just leak out into the flat. And so when the rush came, Herbert would just dump it down, and there was nobody out there on that guy because everybody was coming, and they would get the first down or stay on schedule down and distance-wise, and the drive would continue. And I saw them do that a half a dozen times in the game. So it almost seemed like the Chargers knew every time Kansas City was going to dial up a major blitz call, and they had an answer for it every single time. So it's going to be interesting to see how Kansas City can diversify some of their defensive play calls, because it seems as though, at least the Chargers anyway, this past week, knew what was coming and when. And that is not a good place to be if you're a defense trying to stop a quarterback the caliber of a Justin Herbert.
I would also say, isn't it funny that we didn't even, not that they should be mentioned, but that they've fallen off that quickly, the Pittsburgh Steelers. Of course, we knew their offense was going to struggle just because of the year that Ben Roethlisberger had last year. And I mean, that offense did not look good in that week one game. It was their defense that was completely carrying their team that was able to carry them to a win. But it's funny how quickly a team can fall off after just 1 week of play.
Right. And I think we saw, Steve has said this many times on the show, we watched the Steelers get old in a hurry last year. Their offensive line looked like an old and decrepit bunch by week 12, and it never changed after that. And I think the deterioration of play in the offensive line almost gave the Steelers organization false hope that, oh, it's not Ben, it's the linemen that are the problem. They all got old, they just can't cut it anymore. We'll revamp the line, get another year or so out of Ben, and we'll be okay, and we can kind of start looking for our new quarterback, you know, this offseason or whatever. And that was an error in judgment, potentially of epic proportions, as we may soon find, because Ben looks old in week two and even older in week three. I mean, he's falling down, trying to roll out with nobody around him. He's, like, stumbling. It's tough to watch, quite frankly. And there is no one in the pipeline right now for them at the quarterback position. So poor planning, as far as I'm concerned, for Pittsburgh. And I envision them being under 500. I don't see them ripping off a string of victories anytime soon. So, yeah, that I did not put them in the conversation, and neither did you. And I'm not right all the time, but I think we're right on this one. I don't see the Steelers going anywhere. We have to take a break, but when we come back, more of your thoughts, if you have any, on who you believe the biggest challenger to the Bills is in the AFC after three games played. Feel free to chime in on the tweet sheet or give us a call at 803-0550. And coming up next, we've got some comments for you from the coordinators. After we went off the air yesterday, they addressed the media. We'll have some of their more notable comments next. Brian Daboll and Leslie Frazier here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Shotgun snap, pocket collapsing around him, can't get rid of it, now he does, picked off, intercepted by Poyer at the 40, the 30, and he gets hit from behind and dropped at about the 17-yard line. Intended for Terry McLaurin, Heinicke just put it up for grabs, and there was Jordan Poyer to make the interception.
We had a great pass rush, you know, guys, everybody's doing their job, D-line was getting after him and forcing him to try to check the ball down and make a throw that he didn't want to make, and I was just there to make the play. You just want to continue to get better. You know, anytime you go out there on defense, you want to give your opportunity to take the football away.
That is the Frito-Lay Crunch Time play of the game, brought to you by Frito-Lay. It's Crunch Time! And an update on Jordan Poyer, who left the game with an ankle injury late in the win over Washington. He's been labeled day-to-day by head coach Sean McDermott. Chris Brown, Matty Glab with you here on a Tuesday. And we wanted to get some of the more notable comments from the offensive and defensive coordinators for the Buffalo Bills passed along to you. Much has been made already about the emotions that Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator, had to deal with this past week after the unfortunate passing of his grandmother, who was essentially the woman that raised him, along with his grandfather, in West Seneca. And dealing with that while preparing for a football game, and the players kind of led on after the game that let everybody know what he was dealing with through the course of the week, because he had kept it to himself. The team rallied for him, said they performed and executed the way they did in honor of his grandmother this past week. So here is Brian Daboll on his thoughts about the team rallying and executing on his behalf.
I appreciate them being there for me. And again, you know, my grandmother would have wanted to go out there and play well. And that's what she would want. She wouldn't want to sit there and have people feel sorry for themselves. And, you know, think about how, you know, bad it is when you lose someone, which I'm sure most of you have, that's really close to you and a rock for you. She wants you to have a positive attitude and probably say a couple cuss words in there to get it going. And, you know, she knew Josh pretty well, and Josh's family. So we appreciate him and appreciate all the guys, Dion and really all of them. Those guys have been fantastic. I'm very, blessed to be around those type of guys. So it was good. Look, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It was special to me. You know, I lost a woman that was most important in my life. And, you know, those guys are just great people that, but they want to win no matter what. You know, they want to win every single week. We want to win in everything we do, whether it's a period against the defense, whether it's a 7-on-7 on air, whatever it may be, we want to win. I mean, that's you're in the competitive industry. But again, the relationships that you build with the people that you work with every day, I mean, that's real life. That's important. And that's important to me. You know, I got a ton of respect for those guys in the locker room, not just them, the assistant coaches that I work with. Being there for them, for their families, their children, and it goes both ways. I think that's special if you can create that, but it's got to be real and authentic. And, you know, that's certainly how I felt.
You know, when you think about it, Matty, first point here is this is not the first time that the Bills have had to deal with personal loss. We all remember, of course, when Josh's grandmother passed just before the Seattle game in week 9 last year. And then in recent weeks, I mean, just last week, Zach Moss went down to South Florida early. I believe it was his aunt that passed. And then Saran Neal, I think it was his grandfather that passed. all in the span of the last 10 days here, you know, and then Brian Daboll's grandmother. So the other thing, though, for me that I think goes by the board all too often is these guys in this performance business, you know, most people, when you lose a family member this of this significance, you're given time away from your work. You get a few days off. You kind of take care of family matters. You kind of you kind of pull together as a family, get through the situation, and then you return to work, you know, a few days later, a week later, whatever it is. These guys can't take time off like that during the regular season. So to be able to compartmentalize what was probably a very traumatic, tragic, I don't know what the word is. I don't want to pretend I know what Brian Daboll's feelings were, but clearly she meant an awful lot to him. To be able to compartmentalize that, put that over here, and still prepare for a football game, most people in their line of work do not have to do that when something like this happens.
Yeah, I was going to say, I mean, that's what I was thinking about this week was, or thinking back on this week, once we found out that Brian Daboll lost his grandmother, was just how much time he still spent at the facility during the week. And that's when the people that you're around really become your family, because right. you are at the facility so much throughout the football season that life happens at the football facility. And sometimes you just got a break from the film. You just got a break from practice. And I'm sure these guys do act like human beings at the complex, just with how much time they happen to spend there, and probably how much life and things happen, or how much they find out while they're at that complex too. So I'm glad that they have a tight knit group that, you know, you can act like a real person around. You don't have to, you know, completely shut everything out and focus on just your job of being the offensive coordinator this week. I have to imagine that Brian Daboll had some good conversations and maybe some needed conversations with some of his offensive staff or some of his players. So to know that he's around a group that really cares about him, and same as the players, to know that they're around a group of guys that really care about, you know, their life off the football field. I'm glad that they have that. And I think that's what we see translate to the field on Sundays.
On a much lighter note, Brian Daboll talked about two players that we talked about yesterday on the show, Maddie, namely Dawson Knox and Zach Moss. Obviously, both of those guys making important contributions in the victory on Sunday. Both of them made contributions the week prior in the win over Miami, with Moss's two late touchdowns. Knox had a touchdown catch in that game. So here is Brian Daboll on the progress that those two young players have made in the scope of Buffalo's offense.
Look, Dawson has worked extremely hard since he's been here. I think that, you know, with him and Rob Boris, you know, those guys they're always over there doing individual things. And, you know, it seems like he just is out there practicing on every single rep, and it's paying off for him. He's got a great mindset. I think he's got a lot of confidence. He's in a good headspace. I know we certainly have confidence in him. The quarterback does. And, you know, he's made a lot of plays for us here throughout training camp and leading into the regular season here. Again, it's not about how many catches and all those things. He's just doing the right things. And when you do the right things on a consistent basis, you earn the confidence of, I'd say, the coaching staff and of the quarterback. So, you know, I've seen that. Doesn't surprise me what he did on that play. It was a heck of a catch, but I've seen that throughout training camp here. And I think those are the things that gives you confidence, not just as a coach to a player, but a player for a player. And Zach ran really hard, which we know that. Zach runs hard. He's, you know, he's kind of you don't think about him in the passing game, but every time we throw it to him, he usually makes a play on it. And that's important. And a lot of times it's down there in the red zone when something loose happens. So, you know, working hard to improve. I think that's between Zach and Motor, those guys have a, you know, good thing going, and just trying to improve with it.
So there it is. I mean, it's pretty straightforward. Yes, it's obvious to just about everybody watching the games what those two guys have been able to contribute over these last 2 weeks. But it's an encouraging sign, because those are two guys that I think most would have agreed coming into the season are not proven weapons per se. They have potential, but can you truly count on them in a tight spot? And I think over these last couple of weeks, the answer has been yes, and that's encouraging.
Yeah, Zach Moss has 4.1 yards per attempt right now. That's a pretty good number for him. And Dawson Knox is over 100 receiving yards just through three games. Not that these are eye-popping statistics or anything like that, or lead the league in any way, but I think it's good to see those numbers as benchmark numbers for them right now. You want to see Dawson Knox getting involved in the game early on. I mean, early on in the season. You want to see that be consistent throughout the season. That means that Dawson Knox is performing well. Same thing with Zach Moss. You want him to be the guy that they can go to in those short yardage situations where he can get those tough yards, because he is that big, tough back for the Buffalo Bills. So I'm happy with what I've seen from them through the first three games. I expect more out of them. I'm really interested and excited about what Dawson Knox's role could be this season, just because of what we've seen in the first 3 weeks. He's made some great catches. These are catches that I don't think he would have made last season or the season before. I know last season he had COVID and was on the COVID list and was also dealing with injuries, but to see him bounce back in the way that he has this season, I think that says some good things about what's going to happen down the road for him this season.
Yeah, the only thing that could potentially hold him back is the multitude of weapons that Josh Allen has at his disposal. I mean, we're already seeing that to a certain extent with Stephon Diggs. I mean, he leads the league in receptions last year with 127, and he's not catching as many balls. He's not getting as many targets, naturally, because he's the number one primary focus of opposing defenses, number one. But number two, you have some pretty inviting other options in this offense now, as we saw with Emmanuel Sanders last week. So you wonder if that attention or role within the scope of the passing game changes week to week based on how defenses play them. Coach Frazier had a comment on the play of Matt Milano through the first three games this season. We've seen very good play from Matt Milano over the course of his career in a Bills uniform. But I think most that have watched these first three games would agree that he has taken it to another level through the first 3 weeks this season. So here's Coach Frazier on that subject.
Matt seems to be playing with so much more confidence. You can see it in his urgency, the way he's practicing, the way he's playing. He's much more vocal than he's ever been. There's just a whole nother level to his play. And he these first three games, you know, he's been a good player for us all along, which is one of the reasons he was re-signed to a good contract. But he's taking his game to a low level from an intensity standpoint, and it's really become infectious with the rest of our players. So just love the energy that he's bringing and the fieriness that he's playing with, and hopefully that'll continue.
Yeah, there's no question he's been a catalyst for the Bills defense through the first 3 weeks. As we mentioned on the show yesterday, fumble recoveries in back-to-back games, so he's not just making the dirty work type plays in the front seven. He's making splash plays as well. And I just think he's reading plays a lot more effectively. It's just, you're a four-year vet. You kind of know what to expect. You're familiar with this defense. You can go and play free, and he's been doing that. We are up against the break. When we come back, we might hear one more comment from Coach Frazier, but we have to step aside here. But when we come back, we'll finish off Coach Frazier's thoughts about the week that was, along with plenty more in hour number two, including Good Morning Football's Kyle Brandt, who's set to make his weekly appearance here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Time for New York Lotteries Inside the Numbers. Inside the Numbers is brought to you by the New York Lottery. Get out there and play. The Bills have topped 400 yards in four of their last six games and have extended their streak of 300-plus yard games to 13, breaking a tie for the second-longest streak in team history. So they had a 12-game streak during the first 12 games of the 89 season, but 13 games, breaking a tie. So now the second-longest in team history. We'll see if they can continue that streak. I am assuming they will this week against a Houston team that has found it hard to stop anybody, Matty. Just very quickly on the surface, 23rd in total defense, 18th in points allowed, and not bad. They're 14th in third down defense. That's not too shabby for a team that has trouble stringing together plays on offense. So we'll see where it goes, but I expect a lopsided result. We had one more comment we wanted, Maddie and I wanted to pass along to you from Leslie Frazier, and that was on the secondary's impact through three games this season. As we know, the three veteran members of the secondary all got in on the action last week, as each of them were responsible for a takeaway. Tre'Davious forced a fumble, and then Poyer and Hyde had interceptions. And heck, Levi Wallace, the fourth member, had a pick last week. So here is Coach Frazier on the secondary's impact through three games this season.
We got two tone setters, and Jordan Poyer, along with Micah Hyde, and the things that Tre'Davious can do as well. And you mentioned Taryn, who's become a big-time playmaker for us. And Levi has really held his own in a lot of ways for us and making plays. But I think, Kim, at the end of the day, our D-line, that's the tone setter for our defense. Our secondary, they do a terrific job. And we feel like we have one of the better secondaries in the National Football League. And they play with a ton of energy. They make big plays for us. We have two of our best leaders on the team in our secondary, both Micah and Jordan. So in a lot of ways, they do it in a different way, just their attitude and approach to practice. And man, I think we have a physical secondary as well. We're not just guys who can cover and match receivers, but there's a certain physicality to our secondary as well.
Levi gets a lot of criticism sometimes, but can you talk about the last couple of weeks? He made some big plays in Miami, and he played outstanding yesterday. Can you just talk about his progress?
Yeah, I think Levi has really come along for us. And, you know, he battled throughout the entire offseason. You know, he and Dane were battling for that starting spot, and he won the job through some of his work in training camp as well as the preseason game he was able to play. And I don't know. I know people sometimes want to be critical, like you mentioned, but he's done a good job for us. It's hard not to be targeted when you're opposite one of the best corners in the league in Tre'Davious White. You're going to get balls thrown at you. And I think over these last couple of weeks, he's stood the test. And I think he'll continue to do that throughout the season. But that's not going to stop people from throwing at him. But he'll continue to rise to the occasion.
You know, the biggest thing I take away from the game, Maddie, is I think the defense has shown an ability to contribute to victories in different ways. You know, week two, it was all about the pass rush. And last week, it was all about the guys in the back seven making plays. When you have a defense that can kind of morph and change what they do in the course of a game to change the course of the game in your favor, that's a pretty special thing. I mean, it's not like it's just got, they got a bunch of pass rushers and that's what they win with. Like Washington, for example. When their pass rush wasn't working for them this past week against the Bills, they gave up 43 points. The Bills defense, on the other hand, has different ways to beat you.
Yeah, I think the Bills defense is well-rounded in the fact that they have talent up front, they have talent in the middle, and they have talent on the back end. Yeah, there are some stars mixed in amongst those position groups, but overall, I think they complement each other in that you don't have to rely on one facet of your defense or one part of your defense every single week in and week out, like maybe the Washington football team has to do with their front four. They have guys who can get the job done from your defensive line to your linebackers to your secondary. They're tied for fourth right now with six takeaways, and they have allowed only six plays of more than 20 yards, which is the second least in the league. Again, this goes back to the maturity of the group on the back end.
Yep.
I really liked what Leslie Frazier said about Matt Milano. I know we're talking about secondary right now, but for linebackers, he said that Matt has really been a vocal asset on the defense this year, and he's replicating the calls that Tremaine Edmonds has, because sometimes you need two people to signal what type of defense you're going to go into on each play. So I think each also different players are peaking at the right time over the course of their time with the Buffalo Bills, whether it's Tremaine, whether it's Matt, whether it's Levi, whether it's Greg. I think we're all seeing this come together here this season with where each guy is at in their career, whether it be a 10-year career or a 1-year career so far.
Yeah, I think Milano feels comfortable in his own skin now, maybe more than ever. He got the big contract. He's recognized financially as a leader of that defense. And I think he feels like, okay, you know, I'm a young vet on this team now. I can kind of take more of a leadership role, assist Tremaine wherever possible, and he's doing that. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, it is time for the weekly appearance of Good Morning Football's Kyle Brandt. What does he think of the AFC power structure after three games played? We'll get his thoughts on that, plus a plenty more, including a review of the touchdown celebration, the prom picture between one Josh Allen and Dawson Knox. All of that coming your way next here on One Bills Live, presented by Collider Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual-role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy.
Give my game ball to Josh Allen, who's had to sit around at home and listen to us hype a kicker, a Jaguars kick returner who lost the game, by the way. And Josh Allen's like, I had 358 and 5, you dummies, against this incredible Washington defense that's got this amazing pass rush and all these first-round picks. Josh Allen looked like the kid who should be moved up from junior varsity to varsity in this game. Oh, we got to move him up. He doesn't belong on the field with them. It's his best game of the season. He's been waiting for the Josh Allen game this season. This was a Josh Allen game. The Bills are fully hit their stride. They are a juggernaut, and that guy is one of the best five players in the league. Wow.
All right, big statement there from Kyle Brandt, who joins us as he does every week here on Tuesdays during the regular season. First, welcome, Kyle. Second, top five player in the league.
That's right.
Do you have a handy list of the four you've got in front of him? I can probably think of two or three.
Sure.
Lay that Stephon on us first.
Diggs, Dawson Knox, Milano. I mean, how many do you guys want? My only regret. You know, sometimes I get caught up in the moment, Brownie and Maddie. And I do regret saying he's a top five player. I should have said he's a top three player. What are we talking about here? I can't only go this long listening about other quarterbacks and Dak Prescott this. They're all great. We have a quarterback on a rocket right now. I love this point of the year because we finished 3 weeks and some of these teams are liars and deceivers and they're not anything like we thought they would be. The Steelers come to mind, who somehow beat this team week one. I don't know how that happened.
Yeah, that one's not aging well.
Josh Allen, everything now is settling in like it's supposed to be. To the moon. Yes, top five.
So now the Bills are averaging over 30 points a game, returning to their 2020 form. Josh Allen completes over 74% of his passes against the Washington football team. I mean, that offense looked electric. What did you think of Josh's performance in week three?
Well, I knew that game was coming, Maddie. We all did. It wasn't – that's one of the – when the schedule comes out in April or whenever it is or May and you look at the schedule, you're like, Washington, that'll be tough. You know, they got that defensive line and it's all first-round draft picks. That is never the game that you would have picked as the Josh Allen 2021 explosion game. This week against Houston, sure, but not home against Washington, and that's what's so great about it. This was never a game. Antonio Gibson made it kind of exciting with that long catch and run, but this was a walloping from start to finish against a team that's well-coached and has a good defense. This is the team supposed to give the Bills a little bit of trouble. No trouble, none whatsoever. And so I guess it's cool to see the Josh Allen game. Never would have thought it would be against Washington. That's why this team's already full of surprises.
So you mentioned Dawson Knox here, Kyle, and made an acrobatic play to catch a touchdown from Josh in the game. I don't know if you saw the celebration afterwards, but I need your review of this celebration. I don't know if they pulled this out of a scene from There's Something About Mary, but he scores the touchdown, and they go with the prom pose. Did you see this?
Yeah. I saw it. You can practically smell the boutonniere coming off the photo. So I would I think Josh was hand on the hip, which means that he would have brought the corsage and then Dawson would have been responsible for the boutonniere. There it is. It's an absolutely beautiful moment. They look like, you know what? A lot of times you go to prom. I don't know about you guys. I went to my senior prom with a friend. It's a great girl named Beth who I'd been friends with for 4 years. We didn't have the quote unquote romantic thing, and that's fine. We were just there to have time and sneak a few beers. We took that exact pose. I think the most fun you have at prom is with a friend. Now, maybe that's because I didn't have a girlfriend at the time, so my prom was PG rated, but I relate here to Josh and Dawson, and they're a great looking couple of friends.
Hey, there's a lot less pressure there when it's with a friend, yeah. Right, Maddie?
I was going to say, I went to prom with a friend. I went to prom with a friend my junior and senior year. Wasn't about having any boyfriends. I was too busy in the books, is what the bookworms say, I guess. We look back at this week one loss against the Steelers, and I feel like Bills fans and media members are kind of just scratching their heads as like, is this going to be the loss that haunts this team throughout the season? What do you think?
You know, our mutual friend, former Buffalo Bill Ross Tucker, I think put it perfectly. He said, I suggest that the NFL launches an investigation into how the Steelers beat the Bills week one. I support that. Something is going on here. I smell skullduggery because the Steelers look bad. And Roethlisberger, God bless him. I love the guy and respect his career. Looks like an ornery old man, and he's got a sore pec. And they just had nothing against Cincinnati last week. It was really bad. And yet they had the Bills number, and the Bills looked awful in that game. But here's what I always say, and we talked about this a couple weeks ago. Week one is a liar. It's pathological. The needles are always jumping. The Packers got destroyed on week one. They didn't even belong in the same field as the Saints, and now Rodgers looks like an MVP candidate. I always throw week one away. Week two, as we've talked about, is the Boy Scout, tells the truth. And now we're at the real interesting period where week three is like you're thinking about, like, should we put a ring on it? Like, this is who the teams are. If you're not good by week three, I don't have time for you. And on the flip side, if you are good by week three, I believe in you. Now, teams that come up like that, I believe in the Raiders. I have to. I have to after 3-0 and a couple quality wins. I believe in the Broncos. They don't have quality wins. They haven't played anybody. And people want to point that out. But I would only say, as we look at this AFC landscape that the Bills might run into in the playoffs, the Broncos have not played good teams. But they've beaten the crap out of the bad teams. That is what you're supposed to do. I think these teams are good now at 3-0. 2-0, I couldn't care less. 3-0 is a big deal.
Yeah, and you didn't even mention the Chargers, who I think are for real as well. The AFC is really shaping up to be such a much tougher landscape to navigate than the NFC. I don't even think it's close. But looking to the Bills' Week 4 game this week, I don't think I've ever seen a point spread at 17 or 17.5 points, but that is the reality this week for Bills-Texans. Davis Mills comes in as essentially what is a third-string quarterback, Deshaun Watson stuff, whatever. But no Tyrod, who's still on IR. My concern, Kyle, is this. Not that I'm concerned that Sean McDermott doesn't have his team on the straight and narrow. When you play teams like the Houston Texans and you are the Bills and you've got a team like Kansas City, the following week, Sunday night game, I just worry about the team developing bad habits and then getting smacked in the mouth the next week. What do you think of that?
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to overlook. We're calling it the Bills versus Mills, the Mills Mafia against the Bills Mafia.
is that a thing?
I think you said it all, Browning. This is when you could have the greatest players in the world and the greatest roster. The head coach earns his checks weeks like this. This is a McDermott week. I think this week has very little to do with Allen, Diggs, or anybody on defense. I think this is a Coach McDermott week because there is a massive talent difference between these two teams. The Bills should blow them out. And yet you do worry that you look down on the schedule and it's that little arrowhead up there and you're, oh, it's a classic. We'll call it trap game, whatever you want. I have so much faith in Sean McDermott. And even if they were to mail it in, I still think they're that so much better. I wish they could skip this game. I wish the Bills could play the Chiefs tomorrow on Wednesday night football. Like, I wish they could play them yesterday. Teams are lining up to play the Chiefs right now. Like, there is a fight in the parking lot to park the team bus at Arrowhead Stadium to get a piece of these guys because they're bleeding.
Well, we're just going to talk about it. Look ahead to week five because why the heck not? What is your scouting report on the Chiefs right now? What the heck is up with that team?
Okay. Great question, Maddie. They've lost 3 out of 4 games going back to last season. I think that Patrick Mahomes' closest comp is in the NBA world. I think Patrick Mahomes is Steph Curry. And there are times, if you watch enough Warriors over the years, that Steph Curry starts drinking his own Kool-Aid and starts pulling up from the logo and half court and doing all this stuff that we love him. But you're like, after a while, Steph, all right, enough. Why don't you check it down to Draymond on the low block? I think Patrick Mahomes is finally drunk on his own gifts, and the no-look stuff is not working anymore. And the redirect Kelsey in the middle of a huge play down the stretch in the fourth quarter to lead to an interception, not working. Listen, I know it's blasphemous in any NFL circles to say that Patrick Mahomes is making mistakes. Patrick Mahomes is throwing some dumb interceptions, not just interceptions, dumb ones. He did it the week before against Baltimore, a throw he had no business making, gets picked off, ends up costing them the game. I think Mahomes is feeling it right now. Remember, this guy spent a whole offseason hearing how heroic he was in the Super Bowl, and oh my God, he was running for his lives, and is there any throw he can't make? I think that is what's going on the field right now, because all that magic where he does the around the back, no look, through the legs pass, it's biting him. I think they're beatable. I think their run game is inconsistent as hell. I think they overdrafted that Edwards-Helaire, who's a fumbler, and a fumbler will always be a fumbler, and they've never been more beatable since Mahomes show up. I wish Buffalo could play him now. Just get the team together and find a parking lot and play, because they've never been more beatable.
Let's take that a step further, because I was watching some of that Chargers-Chiefs game back.
Yeah.
And this isn't the first week that we've seen some undisciplined play on the defensive side of the ball for the Chiefs as well. I mean, I'm watching a two-point conversion, and Herbert has Mike Williams out on the left side. They got nobody on him in a two-point conversion situation. Tyrann Mathieu is scrambling out there to go cover him, doesn't get to him in time, and he's, you know, hopping mad there in the end zone, yelling at his teammates. And that's not the only play I'm referencing, Kyle. There's some stuff where they just look all crossed up. I don't know how much that Spagnuolo has changed things there. I know they had Chris Jones playing defensive end the first week or two. That didn't look like it was working. Move him back inside. Get right. Do something. But, I mean, they're giving up 30 burgers to people the last couple of weeks.
Well, Brownie, we were led to believe that Spagnuolo fixed everything. This is a very 2019 conversation to have. Oh, we got Kelsey and Tyreek, and Mahomes is the future of the sport. But oh my gosh, this defense is soft. This defense is bad. That was the old Chiefs storyline in the era of Mahomes. They fixed it. They got pass rushers now. They got the Honey Badger. Spags fixed it, and they won a Super Bowl. And they did. But now, like, it's all coming back. Since he got there, they never had this. This is the deal. He came in, and that is the storyline that is etched in stone in Kansas City and led to a parade. No, totally beatable, totally soft. And I would say this about it. It was one thing to lose to the Ravens, all right? They lost to the Ravens by 1 point on the road. I don't even hold it against them. It was the fourth time they played Lamar. He finally got him. Next week, at home, Herbert never has played Mahomes in Arrowhead, never has played against full fans in Arrowhead, and they lose that game, and they lose that game, and they had it. They blew that game, and I don't even think their running game was that bad. I don't even think their defense got destroyed in that game. They just gave it up, and that's not something they've done in 3 years. So again, Bills fans, it's all setting up there. You got a Texans team that doesn't even know what it is and got their quarterback hurt, and now you got the Chiefs fans. It's almost, I hate to say this, you got to beat the Chiefs. Like, you have to this time. If you lose now, then it becomes a question of, oh, my God, when are we ever going to beat these guys?
I'm already feeling the pressure of this week 5 game. But if the Chiefs aren't the biggest, baddest, toughest team in the AFC, then who's going to be the toughest contenders going up against the Bills in the conference?
I guess the question is it still Kansas City? Because we got caught up, and we're doing it now, the three of us. But on Good Morning Football, we're bashing them and saying defense this, Mahomes doing this. And we're wondering, like, all right, so are the Chiefs still sitting at home and being like, these idiots, have they not watched anything? I don't know if they are. And frankly, like, I don't know what's going on with this team. They also have the off-the-field deal where they had got a scare from Andy Reid, which is kind of unsettling for the locker room. So we're so used to just saying the Chiefs and everybody else. If it's not the Chiefs, are we saying the Raiders are the best team in the AFC? I mean, they're good. They're definitely good. I can't get there. Is it Baltimore? No. I mean, they needed Detroit to just Detroit times a million to even beat the Lions. So it's probably the Bills. I mean, that Bills win over Washington was profound. And I know they lost to Pittsburgh and whatnot, but if I had to pick one right now, I would probably say it's Buffalo.
I hate to bring this up, sitting between two Chicago natives. But I know you were rather outspoken about one Justin Fields' first career start, which it was a dumpster fire of epic proportions. And, you know, we've seen people on various networks go off on Matt Nagy and the Bears and everything, and they set him up to fail. But you can't have look, I love Jason Peters. He started his career here. He's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But you can't put 39-year-old Jason Peters, who spent the summer eating chips on the couch, one-on-one with Myles Garrett. Like, what are you doing? Is there any way that you can explain your way out of what that game plan was for Justin Fields?
I can't. And I've tried to for 48 hours. This is why this storyline is everywhere and why it resonates so much. Because what you have is every armchair coach, every kid who played high school football a little bit or coaches flag football is chipping in with their 2 cents about, well, you got to keep the tight end in. You got to chip this. And you know what? Like, those people are right. They're right for the first times ever. That we still haven't gotten an answer from Matt Nagy about, coach, what was the plan here? Like, what were you thinking? Explain to us. Let us into the game plan of what didn't work that you did. He just hasn't explained it. All he did was come out and announce that Nick Foles has entered the chat. And now he's part of this mess. When you just need to calm it down. I still don't know what they were doing against Myles Garrett. You think, all right, so they gave up 9 sacks. After 6, like, that's when you, like, break glass in case of emergency. Like, we have a crisis here. They weren't even getting warmed up at 6. So Matt Nagy is a great person. I love him as a man. I've met him. I've hung out with him. He comes from a great pedigreed background. I don't know what in the hell that was, but the Bears are around for 102 years, and they've never seen a worse performance than that.
Don't even get me started. My blood's already boiling. My dad's going to be calling me in a second once he hears this interview going, just adding on to why he's so annoyed with the Chicago Bears. But with Justin Fields' performance, with what we've seen from other rookies, is there a best rookie quarterback at this point, or are they all kind of on the same playing field through 3 weeks?
Yeah, I guess Trey Lance by default, because he just comes out and makes these cool little cameos. But I'll tell you the one I'm most pissed off about. I hate that the Mac Jones thing is not working. I hate it. Because, A, it's great Shakespearean theater if the Brady replacement is suddenly amazing right off the bat. And, B, they've taken all the steam out of what I've been calling Super Bowl 55 and a half, which is this weekend at Foxborough. They can't get their act together. Mac Jones throws 3 picks. And even the Brady and the Bucks didn't help by getting blown up by the Rams. So, like, this was supposed to be the biggest regular season game of all time. This was supposed to have the hypes. And imagine if they came in and Mac Jones is slinging it and he looks like the rookie of the year and the Bucks are undefeated. Now it's like, I don't know. They'll roll over on the Pats, probably Tampa will, and then there'll be a contentious handshake we have to look forward to at the end of the game. So there is no great quarterback out of the rookies right now. Lawrence goes tomorrow night against Cincinnati. But the one I am most upset with is Mac Jones, because I needed that regular season game. I needed that thing.
I just love the Patriots fans this weekend are going to be like that obsessive compulsive ex-boyfriend that just can't let go and wants him back. You know, I want my girlfriend back. I want my girlfriend back. And that girlfriend is Tom Brady, and he ain't coming back. He's there to say hi, and you just happen to cross paths with him on the street somewhere, and you think you can rekindle something, and it's just not happening. I'm soaking all of that up.
Metaphor. Do you think, all right, so we were talking about this morning about, I don't think anybody thinks that the Patriots fans are going to boo Brady. That's fine. But what if Brady does one of these rushing touchdowns that he does and does a huge emphatic spike and does one of those screams? Does Foxborough boo him then just out of their natural guttural reaction? I think they do.
Now, I think a better celebration is if he does get into the end zone, he hands the ball to Gronk. Gronk spikes it emphatically, and then they both kind of do the Queens wave up to the crowd. Do a full 360, little queen wave action, or do the prom picture. I'm just as happy with that, too. I mean, copy Josh and Dawson and make it go. Make it go. I'd soak that all up. Kyle, I've said it for over a year. The best win that the Bills had last year, by far, the most enjoyable. It's not even close. It's week 16, Monday night at New England. Belichick slamming the phone into the Microsoft Surface box. That is 20 years of angst in Buffalo released in one game. It was nothing comes close.
I remember the post-game Belichick-McDermott, you know, embrace was not terse, not cold. And I remember Belichick, I don't know, talking to him in his ear and everything. And, like, I was like, oh, my God, the whole world just changed. Never mind the AFC East. I feel like the whole NFL just changed. That was a crazy game. And that phone spike, I mean, that's as good as it gets.
Yeah, that was a coming-of-age coaching moment for Sean McDermott.
I know.
All right, if we've seen Bill Belichick do that against the Bills in a loss, what do we think a Bill Belichick cam would look like, or what do you think it would pick up when he's playing against his former quarterback in Tom Brady? What do we hope it's going to pick up, I guess?
Well, how about just like some actual authentic human emotion? You know, Belichick has had that at times. Like there's times it comes out and he breaks character with the media when some good things have happened and when some terrible things have happened with the Patriots. And like, you know, it's an extreme example, but I remember when the whole Aaron Hernandez thing broke, he came out and had this very, very emotional, eloquent press conference that went on for a long time. He has that in him for good and bad. And yet I worry he's just going to do the poker face thing, because we pulled up a quote this morning that Schrager did on our show where Belichick was asked, you know, what's it going to be like, you know, about Tom? And I'm paraphrasing here, but he said, you know, we lost a lot of guys over the years, and then you see him, you know, like Chris Hogan is a guy that we lost, and then we play against him. We're like, hold on.
Oh, man.
Chris Hogan is a very nice player and a very nice story and a very nice guy. Do not mention Chris Hogan playing him again when it comes to Brady. That's not even in the same strat. I don't even want to hear about Gronk or Edelman or any, I don't even about any sport. So, like, I find it disrespectful to the Brady equity to even mention Chris Hogan's name in any context. Yeah. So if that's how Bill's going to play it, it might be nasty.
I mean, at least go Ty Law or Lawyer Malloy or Vince Wilfork.
Yeah, Vince Wilfork.
Like,
Richard
at least
Seymour.
get in the vicinity. My God.
Chris Hogan,
and I love Chris Hogan too. He's a former Bill.
Love him.
I laughed this morning watching you guys on Good Morning Football, because Maddie and I did a far briefer breakdown of the poor Lions fans sitting behind the uprights. You had a metal pointer. You had five different waves of emotions in the crowd. I mean, this was an elaborate breakdown of the fans behind the uprights on Justin Tucker's game-winning 66-yard field goal, which, for the record, should have been a 71-yarder, Kyle, with a delay of game that wasn't called. But we'll bypass that. What prompted you to get this deep in the weeds with the emotions behind the uprights here?
I'll tell you, Brownie. When I was in college, my last year of college, I had a huge poster above my bed, and it was when Michael Jordan made the shot over Brian Russell to beat the Jazz. There was this photograph that a lot of people had in Chicago, and Maddie, you'll remember this, that it was of all these Jazz fans, and the ball was splashing through the net, and all these Jazz fans were just pulling their hair out and crying and despairing. And I used to just sit there and look at that just for hours, and just picking out my favorite person and who's feeling it the most, who doesn't care. It was the entire human emotional experience. So there's this shot of the same thing as the ball's bouncing through the crossbars or the uprights. You can see all these Lions fans who are like, oh my God, we're going to beat Lamar Jackson. Oh my God. And it's like, pick your favorite. It's like a Where's Waldo, except you're looking for the most miserable or most shocked person. It's an unbelievable exercise. I had fun doing it on TV this morning. I suggest everybody can look at the picture and do it yourself. It's fun.
Yeah, I don't know that Bills fans would be doing a whole lot of that, because they've had some games like that over the years.
They have.
Too. It was hard not to feel for Lions fans, especially knowing the penalty probably should have been called and wasn't. So it was just a whole mess. But
you know what they say, Brownie? You know what I say in response to that penalty? They would have tried it from 71, and he would have made it. And I know that he gave it, and it landed right at 67 on the board, or 66.
71?
It's Ford Field. They could have tried it from 97, Brown, and they would have kicked it, and a pigeon would have flown out of the rafters and grabbed the ball
Carrier pigeon.
It over the crossbars. Yeah. Whatever they needed, he would have made.
All right, I think we wrap there on carrier pigeon out of the rafters. Kyle, thanks as always for the time. We will catch up with you next week, where we hopefully are talking about a 30-point Bills victory.
I'll give it to you 41-11. That is precisely 30
11.
Points. Yes, 41-11, and then we'll get into some Chiefs talk next week. You guys are the best. Thank you very much for having me, and go Bills.
Yeah, go Bills indeed. We have to take a break, but we're back with more here in a moment on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back to One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glad with you here on a Tuesday. And good to always catch up with Kyle Brandt. We did want to take the time now to identify and recognize our AdPro High School Coaches of the Week. The Bills and AdPro Sports partnering to recognize some of the best coaches that Western New York has to offer through the 2021 High School Football Coach of the Week program. For Section 6, our winner in Week 4 is Williamsville South head coach Craig Kurzanski, named the Week 4 winner after leading the Billies to a 45-22 win over defending Section 6 Class A champ South Park. Billies even their record of 2-2 with the win. Kurzanski has been coaching Will South since 2007, led the Billies to 4 league titles, and advanced to the Class A title game on 2 occasions. Section 5, it's Avon coach Andy Englert, named the Rochester Region's Coach of the Week after leading the program to a 26-6 victory over Cal Mum Byron Bergen last week. With the win, their squad improved to 4-0 on the season. Englert has coached at Avon for 24 seasons and has posted a record of 119-90 in that span. He's led Avon to 5 Section 5 Class D titles. So that's that. One thing we've got to do, though, Maddie, is we've got to get to the tweet sheet to find out who our listeners and viewers believe is the biggest challenger to the Bills in the AFC through the first 3 weeks. And JT leads us off on the tweet sheet, which is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official equipment moving provider of the Buffalo Bills. And JT says, no one. We are the biggest challenger to ourselves. This seems like a very deep psychological thing that JT is doing here. We are on top of the power rankings, and like Tasker says, we just have to play better on that day we are scheduled. One game at a time. If we stay focused and stay the course and believe in the process, I know we can complete the process. JT going all zen on us there.
JT also sounds like a coach. I mean, how many times have we heard this team say on games where we have lost or not played as well, we beat ourselves, we shot ourselves in the foot. So yeah, a lot of times, maybe the Bills can get in their own way against some tough opponents or against a team in the Steelers where we suffered our first loss of the season. But I'm buying it.
Yeah. I mean, he's parroting a lot of what Coach McDermott has said for the better part of the last 5 years, right? So can't fault him for that. Tiffany on the tweet sheet says, Cleveland. They have a solid defense with probably the best defensive end in the NFL in Myles Garrett. Now, Cleveland has played well just about every game this season. Tough loss in Week 1 at Kansas City. I think they had a team that basically rolled over and died last week in the Bears. So I don't know that that's an accurate measuring stick for where Cleveland is right now. But as I said earlier in the show, I think you could argue that Buffalo and Cleveland are probably the two teams with the most complete rosters. And they have some elite talent to boot, as mentioned, Myles Garrett. So I think that's why they are firmly in the AFC conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. Cleveland was a good team last year. They almost got by the Kansas City Chiefs. Yeah. I remember watching the end of that game being like, just beat them. I don't want to play the Chiefs in the AFC Championship game. So Cleveland Browns were right there. We knew they were going to have another good team this season just because of how balanced they are on both sides of the football. Their defense is really good. Their defense is going to continue to stay good throughout the season. So this is a team that I would watch out for. And Baker Mayfield, he's a good quarterback too. They've got some good running backs who can help him out as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if Baker's the kind of quarterback that can get you all the way to the promised land by himself. So Cleveland has wisely loaded up on defense to support him with a good defense and with a great 1-2 punch running game with Kareem Hunt and Nick Chubb, along with probably one of the top 5 offensive lines in football. Just a really, really complete roster. Jack says, I don't know how you still can't say Kansas City, which Maddie and I did both say. All that talent on offense, a tight end no one can cover, great coach, and oh yeah, that QB. I know they've stumbled out of the gates, but they are still better in any one game than most other teams. Until the Bills beat them, they remain the threat. Hey, Jack and me are on the same page. Good on you, Jack. You want to be the man, you got to beat the man. And that's what KC is. They're the big bully in the room, and until you take the bully down, they're going to be the top dog, and I don't see any way around that. So that's why... That's why this Week 5 game, Maddie, looms so large.
And there is a week in between that week five game, right, which means the Kansas City Chiefs have a week to figure some of that stuff out on defense and for Patrick Mahomes to figure out some of that stuff on his own in terms of the interceptions that he has thrown so far this season. Josh Allen didn't have a great two starts to the 2021 season, but in week three, Josh figured it out. It can be done in a week. The Kansas City Chiefs are a good enough team to where I think they can figure some things out in a week, although I don't think they're going to completely repair this defense. I think this defense could have some holes going forward in the season and not be as stout as they were last year. Not that they've really ever been leading with their defense. It's always been their offense, and it was Spagnuolo who came in to save the day for their defense and put together a defense that could at least help them get to the championship in the last 2 years.
Right. And the Chiefs figure to get healthy this week because they'll be playing the Eagles. Granted, it is in Philadelphia, but the Eagles are coming off a short week, and I just don't know that they have the horses to compete with the Chiefs as Andy Reid makes a homecoming of sorts. And good news for Andy Reid, he was back at work today, so it looks like that little hospital stay has been put behind him, which is certainly good news. Herb on the tweet sheet says, in the AFC East, absolutely no one. In the AFC Conference, I would have to say the Chiefs. Even though they have lost two of three, we all know they will be there in the end. Cleveland also bothers me. Their defense is totally legit. I like that Cleveland is an annoyance to him. That's awesome. I don't think Mayfield can keep up with Josh in a shootout, though. See, now, that's I agree there, too. Like I was just saying, I don't know if Mayfield is a guy that can completely carry his team's offense. But Cleveland has wisely built it around him. He's got enough receiving targets. He's got a really good offensive line. He's got a running game where he can just turn and hand the ball off if he needs to.
Yeah, I could see Cleveland being an issue for many teams. But when you pair Cleveland up with the Buffalo Bills, I agree with that comment. And I don't know if Baker can win in a shootout with Josh Allen. If this offense keeps performing in the way that it has last week, if they keep that average of 30 points up, just over 30 points a game up, it's hard for teams to keep up with a team who's scoring that much and getting into the end zone as much as they are. And of course, holding on to the ball as long as they are, if they're scoring that many points. So if the Bills continue to play like they have, teams are going to have to score a lot against Buffalo. And it's going to be hard to score a lot against Buffalo if the defense continues to play the way that it has to start the season as well.
Finally, Thomas on the tweet sheet says, it's still early to determine whom shall be in contention for the AFC. This guy sounds like an English teacher. But the cream always rises to the top. KC, Titans, Ravens, and Browns will all be there in the end. In my opinion, the Titans and the Browns will be serious challengers. KC may show up on Sunday Night Football, and then the Titans. Yeah, this Week 5 and Week 6 game coming up here, once we get past Houston, it's going to cause, I have a feeling it's just going to cause a lot of consternation for Bills fans because they remember what happened last year when they had to play these two teams back-to-back. And the difference this year as opposed to last year, Matty, both of them are on the road. Both of them are in prime time.
But the nice thing is going to be, hopefully, none of these games are delayed by a day or two or three right, because of COVID. Hopefully, they stay on schedule, a Sunday night and a Monday night. I also like that maybe 2 years ago, a back-to-back night games, high stakes, big crowd, a lot of attention, national attention being put on these next two games in Week 5 and Week 6, looking past the Texans. I think this is a team that is mature enough that can have two big back-to-back games. Years past, I don't know. I think when in 2019, 2020, there was a little bit of a learning going on in terms of having those night games and what your schedule looks like the following week, what your schedule looks like leading up to that week, because this is a team who is used to a lot of 1 p.m. kicks, and now that's not the case for them. So I don't see these two night games being an issue in terms of scheduling and mindset-wise and getting through the week with those things. But yeah, two big games coming up for the Buffalo Bills. It's going to be talked about a lot.
All right, time for a little NFL true false, Maddie. Are you ready? NFL true false.
Do it.
Brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. And we begin here. None of the first round quarterbacks were ready to start. You were just asking Kyle about this in the last segment. What the heck's going on with the first round rookie QBs? It has not been pretty.
This is tough because I think they're good quarterbacks. I think some of them have maybe not been dealt the best cards to play with in the first 3 weeks of the season. And because of that, I think it's been a bad environment or not the best setting or environment for them to play in. Does that make them not ready to start? I don't think so. I think it's not all on them. And I kind of talked about this with Justin Fields' performance and how it's not all on Justin Fields, that it was his fault that they had 47 total yards of offense and looked terrible. I think other people share that blame. So I'm going to say from the thought process of it wasn't just the quarterbacks, the rookie quarterbacks that made themselves not capable to start because of their skill set.
Yeah.
I think it was also coupled with what they were dealt in terms of opponent health of their team, playmakers that they did or did not have.
I think it's kind
of, so I'm going to say false on this one.
It's kind of a moot question for me. Because are rookie quarterbacks ever really ready to start? Like, there are so few quarterbacks who start as rookies that look really good right from the jump. I mean, the last one I can think of is Dan Marino, who started from the jump and looked great. Beyond him, like, I mean, Patrick Mahomes doesn't count. He didn't start till his second year. He started one game his rookie year at the end of the season in a throwaway game that the Chiefs didn't need. Roethlisberger, who had a number one defense and a great running game, survived, but he wasn't the reason they were winning. He threw the ball 15 times a game. They had Jerome Bettis bashing into people, you know, 35 times a game. He didn't have to do much. I don't know that rookie quarterbacks are ever ready. So I guess I'm looking at that question far different than you are, in a much different way. So I'm going to say true, because rookie quarterbacks never really are ready, especially the first 3 weeks of the season. They're still learning on the fly. Their head's spinning around like The Exorcist. I mean, they don't know what's coming at them. So that's why I say that. All right, that was an abbreviated version of NFL True False, because our analysis quickly ran us out of time there. Brought to you by Yancey's Fancy, New York's artisan cheese. Maddie and I take a break here, but we wrap things up next. Here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio. Time now for Reed's Milestones. Reed's Gems, the official jeweler of the Buffalo Bills. Bills quarterback Josh Allen has surpassed Hall of Famer Jim Kelly for the most games with 300-plus passing yards and 4-plus passing touchdowns in Bills history. This is the ninth time in team history with zero first-half points allowed in back-to-back games. Well, that's from last week, guys. What do you got up there on the screen? We got passing yardage totals. You're talking about the Miami game. Cool thing for Josh Allen as he surpassed a bunch of people. There's only like a couple of Hall of Famers that have done it as many times in his career too, Maddie. So what do we think we get from Josh this week? Because I'm expecting this game to kind of get out of hand quickly. And so that leads me to think that Josh won't be throwing it all over the place, because the score will say, let's just shorten the game as quickly as possible and run the thing. Are you kind of seeing it that way? Or
I am. I also see a game where Josh Allen doesn't play all four quarters. I think we might see another Mitchell Trubisky appearance to close out the game if the Bills are in a situation like they were last week. But I see another 300 passing yard game for him. It only makes sense. Yes. I think it only makes sense for him to have a similar game like he did against the Washington football team. I think this Houston Texans defense is not the best. They are middle of the league in some statistical categories. They're near the bottom of the league in some. They're allowing 28 points per game. They're allowing 269 passing yards per game. So I think he does go over that. But yeah, could they try and maybe start running the ball at times just to run time off the clock?
Yeah,
I could see that too, but I do think he has a similar game. Maybe not a 5-touchdown game, but I think it's similar.
Yeah. All right. Maddie, thanks for your help here on Monday and Tuesday. We'll see you again on Friday. We got Reuben Brown in tomorrow helping me out as Steve's still out of the office. We'll see you then.